topless. That's always nice.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
God, is that how we're opening the show?
I think it started with the word topless.
I was going to say, any conversation starting with Anna Paquin topless is A-okay by me.
It's totally worth talking about. No, that was it's funny because just last week, Misty and I were watching this movie on Netflix called Trick or Treat, and she's in it, as well as the girl who played Riley for that season or two on CSI, and it was kind of hilarious. And that's a really cool movie you should check out. It's just a really fun, like, 90-minute horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they put a lot of good new stuff on Netflix. My Little Ponies is up now, which I know we've talked about before on the show. So
yes, we have.
You're curious about Friendship is Magic.
Oh, so it's the new series they have up.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
I've been I fell in love with the show called Lost Tapes from Animal Planet, and now they just put up season 3 the other day, apparently. And when Misty and I were looking for something to watch, and I was like, oh, it recommends Lost Tapes. I already watched that. And then there's the little new episodes banner, and I was like, what?
That's the one that you were telling me about the other day?
Yeah, it's like every B-movie that you loved growing up as a found footage fake documentary. So it's like, you know, every week it's like a different, like, monster. And it's like they start with, like, Chupacabra, and it's about this family of Mexican immigrants trying to get across the U.S. border. And it's pretty cool.
Hmm.
I love it.
I haven't checked it out yet, but I've been planning on it.
Yeah, they're all short, too. They're like 20 minutes. Like, I went through like a season and a half of it in an afternoon, probably because I was really bored. But it was a great show.
We got Saved by the Bell on Netflix now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That's a creepy look back.
I still really like that show. I loved that show when it was still new.
So did I. But, God, I feel so old watching it now. I'm like, Jesus, that's... It's so bizarre to see these people as middle schoolers in the first couple seasons. And
yeah,
they're all 40.
Yeah, I didn't like when they were in middle school. I didn't really care for that one. It was when they got to Bayside High. That's when I really enjoyed the show.
Yeah, for sure.
And they started hanging out at the Max or whatever that place was.
Yeah, the Max. That's exactly it.
Dude, that place was awesome. I always wanted to eat there.
It seemed like a pretty fun place. You got the jukebox. You have nice staff that's familiar with you. It's like Cheers, but for high school kids.
Yeah, they never really have to pay.
No, never. Well, they're high school kids. They don't have money. It was the 80s.
Right. And then when they have their little band, they're able to perform in there and have their little dance-off and band-off.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in high school, there's a restaurant that opened up near the high school that designed itself after the Max, which I thought was pretty hilarious.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was great. It was terrible, but it was awesome just because of the decor.
Mm-hmm.
So,
there's this theory. I don't remember where I read it, but it was recently, that Mr. Belding is actually Zach time traveling from the future, and he's caught and he's caught in a perpetual loop for all of eternity, forced to deal with himself as a high schooler.
That would be a fun version of hell.
Yeah. I wish I could remember where I saw that.
I'm inclined to believe it. That's canon. I've decided that now. just saying, because I'm apparently the arbiter of Saved by the Bell canon.
Okay. See, I want to go back and watch it with that in mind, though, and see if it affects how I perceive his interactions with Zach.
Hmm. That would be pretty interesting. Was he also the principal of their middle school too?
He was. Yeah, he absolutely was. Because I started watching the first few episodes of the middle school version.
Wow, that's gonna be like a really just kind of terrible promotion, you know? But I guess that just lends credence to Chris's theory.
Well, yeah. But it's more believable than what was Mr. Feeny from Boy Meets World, where he just follows him around everywhere.
Well, obviously, Feeny is Sean from the future. God, that show was nuts. Why were there so many great high school dramas about kids who were obviously too old to actually be in high school?
Yeah. I don't know.
You know.
We saw, that reminded me of a bad drama. remember Dallas in the 80s, obviously. Everyone knows about Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Larry Hagman and Patrick Duffy are coming back, and there's going to be a brand new series of Dallas.
I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah.
That is just weird.
I told my mom about it yesterday, and she was excited as shit. Because she loved Dallas in the 80s, and she was just so excited. It was kind of cute.
I was unaware that Dallas tested well with the Persian community.
Oh, yeah. You have intrigue, you have rich people, there you go.
Oil.
Oil.
I'm going to hell.
It's all right. It'll be a well-populated place.
So. Yeah. Well, I was already going for that comment I made about Adam having one eye. And.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a terrible human being.
That's why you're funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that's why we're all friends.
Well, you know, we all can't be at PAX, so we all have to be bitter about something.
Yeah.
To each other. Because we can't be bitter to the people at PAX because they're not responding to text messages or tweets.
Yeah, that's true.
Some of them are. Some of them are.
Andy's not. At least not.
Oh, Jimmy. He's not?
No. Nah. I don't know. Probably because he's all like, oh, I'm hanging out with these people. And I'm like, you son of a bitch. I was at the same kind as all those people last year, but none of them had time to hang out with me.
Oh.
You know? That was painful.
That's sad. Whatever. No one wants to hang out with Tom.
That's fine. We got to play Assassin's Creed before he did.
That's true.
I don't even like Assassin's Creed.
And we got to it wasn't just that we got to play it before him. We got to flaunt it in front of him with pictures and videos across the ocean.
Of us playing the game how he would have played it.
Yes.
Precisely. Because the funny thing is that really, like, a week before that, I had just watched a couple of, like, his how-to multiplayer videos. And then they were all still kind of fresh in my mind. As I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, wait a second. This works in Brotherhood. Let's see if it works in Revelations. Oh, yep, we totally just kicked their ass using the same tactics.
Great.
That was fun.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Ghost Recon, we'll get to jump into that on the 19th with the multiplayer beta.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. Should be pretty all right. Mm-hmm. If it still plays anything like the multiplayer from E3 last year.
Yeah, I imagine it will. I mean, I don't know what they'd change that drastically between then and now.
Well, there will be no more guns.
It's turned into a zombie melee game. Is that what it is?
Yep. Yeah, actually, it's all zombies. It's Resident Evil Raccoon City. There we are. That's what happened. They heard that it was such a huge success, they just licensed all the tech and slapped Ghost on it. It's Ghost Evil Operation Raccoon City. There we go. Ghost, sorry. If, yeah.
Ghost Evil Operation Raccoon City.
Yep.
Okay.
There we are, calling it. God, I hope I'm wrong.
You better be wrong.
Yeah,
if it's true, you're to blame. For putting it out there in the universe.
I bet you somebody from Ubisoft is listening to this right now. Actually, as we're recording it, they have hacked in and they're like, well, that's a great idea. Let's do this.
Probably, yeah.
Halt development. Hey, Capcom.
Yeah, halt development 24 hours a day from now forward. Change everything so that you can have it.
Yeah. Whatever, they'll just buy the tech from Capcom and reskin it, you know? Let's,
yeah.
They could take the easy way out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, well, here's the problem, though, is, I mean, Capcom's a Japanese developer. They are just now understanding that you can use the same engine for multiple games.
Mm.
You know, so, like, that's just a huge, like, you know, they're probably all like, what? Just reskin it? That's not possible.
American ingenuity for you.
I know. Well, we are kind of lazy, but at the same time, you can do amazing things with, you know, a single engine used for different properties.
Definitely. Well, what, Unreal has been used for how many different games?
Everything.
Yeah.
Like Splinter Cell Conviction, the Arkham Asylum, Arkham City games.
Mass Effect.
Of course, the Unreal games.
Yeah.
And the Epic games, like, you know. And, of course, the best people the best work that's being done in Unreal are being done by not Epic.
Right.
So. I hate their art style.
I can't think of too many games out of Epic that I really care for. Bulletstorm was fun. We've talked about that one.
Yeah, but that really, I mean, that really wasn't them.
Right, yeah, that was developed, and that was just, yeah.
Yeah, that was People Can Fly, and it's kind of like also like Infinity Blade. I do enjoy Infinity Blade for my iPhone, but that's done by, like, a special team within Epic that's not Epic.
Right.
Though at the same time, Infinity Blade is very much an Epic game.
Yeah, I liked it when it first came out, and then I got bored with it pretty quick.
Yeah.
Because I like the concept that you keep going through as the son of your previous character until you get powerful enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really cool concept, but it's almost the same game each time I played through it.
Yeah, it plays a lot better on the iPad, too.
Oh, yeah?
I bet, man.
Not like the iPad number 2, but iPad as well.
I played it on the iPhone, so I can understand it being better with more screen real estate.
Well, it's not even just it is exactly more screen real estate, but it makes, like, parrying an actual legitimate defensive option.
Hmm.
You know, because you actually have the ability, like, because you can see it coming, you can get the direction right. Because whoever came up with the idea of having to parry exactly on the line of attack was just mean. You know, like, I'm sure that, like, it was a great idea when they were sitting there, like, at the table, and they're all like, well, we have this idea for a game. It's called Infinity Blade, and it will be on iOS devices, and you'll be able to dodge by tapping left or right on your screen, and we'll be able to block by hitting the little block button in the center. And they're all like, well, wouldn't it be cool if you could parry? Well, how would you do that? Well, you would obviously just swing in the exact line that your opponent is swinging at you.
Yeah, that is pretty mean. But you know what's even more mean? The way George R.R. Martin kills almost everyone that you become attached to in his Song of Ice and Fire series.
Oh, man, like in season 2 when he kills Tyrion? I mean...
Oh, shit.
And then when Daenerys falls down the canyon, I mean...
Oh, yeah.
No, that is really rough. I mean, that's how you can tell when someone's going to die, though, in those books, is when you get attached.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, man, I love Ned Stark. Oh, whoa. Now his head is separated from his body.
Yeah. By the way, in case you haven't seen or read any Game of Thrones yet, there are spoilers here.
There are spoilers for stuff that's been out for, you know, the books 20 years. And
oh, okay. So it's cool if Adam and I talk about Dance with Dragons then, since... You should be caught up.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey,
no. Dance with Dragons came out, what, like 6 months ago?
Oh, God, that came out almost a year.
Yeah,
almost
sometime mid last year, I think.
Yeah, not quite a year. Like, I think that the spoiler cutoff, like, the point, especially, like, for, you know, books, would probably be in, like, the 5-year range because, you know.
Like, I remember people getting angry when Two Towers was about to come out in theaters. And we'd be talking about waiting to see Gandalf come back and people getting pissed about spoilers.
The
books have been out since the 1950s.
Yeah, that point, fuck you. Like, it's out there.
Yeah. If you don't know that Gandalf comes back, I'm sorry for you. But that's your problem, not mine.
You know what? They should have been able to figure it out by virtue of the fact that it was out there that Ian McKellen was signed on to do all 3 fucking movies.
Yes, that too. That should have been an indicator.
Yeah, Cerian McKellen, badass job, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I imagine he listens to our podcast.
Of course. He's one of our strongest listeners.
Yeah, he actually writes comments every week.
Mm-hmm.
We just never see them because they're magic.
They're all in my mind, that's why.
Oh, man. No,
I think the difference with the Game of Thrones series, though, is that so many people didn't really know about it till the series hit.
Right.
I actually avoided it until the series was getting built up. So, you know, I'm a fairly recent addition, but I think at this point they should have at least gotten through the first season and or book. So, if the Ned Stark thing's a spoiler, too bad.
It's not even a spoiler. It's like all of, like, the commercials and stuff that they've had, all of the featurettes and the little behind-the-scenes things, pretty much every single one says, and Ned Stark died at the end of last season. And all of the news reports are all like, wow, I can't believe they killed their primary star at the end of the first season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, like, the only way that you cannot know that Ned Stark dies at the end of the first season is if you live under a rock and don't understand that there's this thing called the internet, and it is similar to, like, a television, except that there's more information on it.
I didn't understand why he would kill off his main character until I started reading the rest of the books. And I think it's really just his way of preparing you and saying, hey, listen, every character you love is going to make the worst possible decisions and have terrible luck.
Ever.
They're all going to die, and get used to it.
I mean, I don't think it'll work for every series out there. Like, if Lord of the Rings was like that, I wouldn't enjoy it as much as I do.
Well, the thing is
but with Game of Thrones, I think that he's trying to create a world without that safety net of this is a main character. Of course they're going to live. Now you have no idea. Some might live, some might die. Yeah, are they likely to die? Probably, yes.
Well, it's like when you look at like the grander order of that world, you know, that is that world. It is a very dark world. Like Lord of the Rings, they are in a dark period, but it's not a dark world.
True.
You know, actually, those are very comparable stories when you think about it, because they are both very large-scale fantasy epics looking at multiple characters and perspectives. And but it's just like the underlying principles, the foundation of Martin's Song of Ice and Fire, or Game of Thrones, whichever is like the official name for it now.
Well, Song of Ice and Fire for the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's this foundation of this, you know, the whole world, the culture is built on this brutal, as Cersei Lannister calls it, the Game of Thrones,
yeah.
You know, and you play or you win or you die.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, when you're trying to become king or you're trying to maintain, you know, your kingship or kingdom or whatever it's called, it's a deadly game.
Yeah.
You know?
And I read a good commentary yesterday on it, actually, about when Ned is trying to hold the throne after Robert's demise. That, you know, Ned is a very honorable man, and he has very strong principles, and he sticks to them, and it's very black or white for him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing worse than a conniving king of Westeros is an honorable, principled king of Westeros, because you can't survive in the political climate.
Oh, hell no. Hell no, you can't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just... when you look at it, really, I mean, anyone who's on an extreme in that universe basically has a... target painted on them.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I mean, that's the only way to adapt in that is to become a gray area or do like the Sansa thing and just do whatever everyone around you is doing.
Yeah.
You know, like, have you seen the premiere for season 2 yet?
I haven't seen any of the season 2 yet.
Oh, man. There's just, like, because, well, that's out there in some people. There's just a moment right there at the beginning where it's just, like, you, between her and Tyrion, and, like, you really see how much of the Kool-Aid she's drinking just so she can, like, you know, not die, because Joffrey's a complete fucking tool.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, Tyrion just, and Peter Dinklage does such a great job with that character.
He has. He deserves the Emmy he got.
He got top billing for the series now.
Nice.
Yeah.
As so, he should.
Yeah, he is Tyrion, really, for the next while, is, like, the main character,
mm-hmm.
You know?
I'd have to say my favorite characters, though, the ones that I'm pulling for, are Arya and Jon.
Yeah, they
I really like Jaime Lannister, too, now.
Tom and I talked about that.
Yeah.
it sucks liking Jaime now, but he's turned a corner and really changed a lot about who he is and his perspective.
And they really lay the foundation for that in the first episode of season 2.
Mm. Like, I had a friend of mine who was reading the books for the first time as well, and he got to the part where they shoved Bran off the roof, and he was, I don't know, he was deeply affected by that, obviously, with the, you know, a kid being thrown off a roof really hurt him, and he was furious with Jaime, and he did not believe me when I said, hey, listen, by the end of the third book, you're going to love him. And he even came around. And that's... I don't know. I think a lot of people are going to be shocked at how much they love that actor and that character by the time the third and fourth seasons hit.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, because as I was going through the third book, I was pretty much texting Chris, you know, on a fairly hourly basis. you know, I was essentially live blogging my experience to Chris.
Yeah.
And it's just, you don't want to like Jaime Lannister. It's like, you don't want to like anyone whose name is Lannister.
Nope.
At all.
But well, then, I've from the beginning, I've had an affinity for Tyrion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even he would admit he's not really the cookie cutter of a Lannister.
No, he would admit that he's pretty much not even really a Lannister.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's a Lannister in name and money only.
Yeah.
And not always money either.
Yeah, not always.
Honestly.
Although, it seems to me that of Tywin's three children, Tyrion is the one who is most like his father, even though Tywin would never admit it or appreciate it.
Man, could you just imagine, though, if Tyrion had the Iron Throne and, like, how much cooler everything would be?
I'd believe it.
I think it depends on what point in Tyrion's life, because he's changed a lot, and even into the fifth book, I kind of...
Yeah, I'm not there yet, so...
Oh, well, then you don't know that he already actually does take the throne at the end of the fifth book, so in the sixth one, we'll go ahead and see the effects of that.
Oh, I'm hoping that in the sixth one, him and Bran, who has obviously regained the use of his legs, he comes marching down from the north with his own, like, eighth army of squirrels and swamp people.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about Bran as a character. I really am sick of his chapters, but...
I don't know. I'm on the fence. He's not like a character that I really enjoy, but he's not a character that I hate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just don't know what they're doing with him. He seems so much more stuck in stasis.
I know. Yeah. I have a feeling I know where they're going with it. I can't say anything because Tom hasn't gotten to certain parts yet, but I have a feeling that they'll go somewhere good with Bran. It's just him getting to that point. There's not a lot of interesting anything happening because it's, you know, there's not a lot he can do. It's pretty much just travel and learn for him right now. I understand how you say he's kind of in a stasis mode as far as his part of the story, but I have a feeling they're going somewhere good with him.
Yeah, I really hope so. Like, I know what I think he's ultimately going to be responsible for doing. You know, I mean, I don't know what happens after Dance with Dragons or Feast of Crows or whatever book I'm on now. I don't even know.
Crows.
Yeah, but it's just, the one thing that I really do enjoy about this universe is how it kind of mirrors a little bit like the Shadowrun universe, with this idea of magic is like on a sine curve, and they were in a lull of little to no magic, and now they are very rapidly approaching an era of magic again.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Oh, no, spoiler. Sorry. There's magic. And dragons.
Yeah. But see, is there really magic? Like, we don't really know what the deal is with some of the quote-unquote magic. There might be a more realistic or scientific explanation. I'm not really sure yet. Except for, of course, the resurrection thing.
Yeah, the bullshit that anybody who follows the Lord of Light pulls off, that's magic.
Yeah, I'd say that... Melisandre and her people, the Red Priests, they're called?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I'd say that they have magic, because, you know, we've seen things that she's been able to do that are beyond the realm of mortal capability.
I mean, even as we're initially introduced to her in the prologue for Clash of Kings... You know, where she had, you know, the maester hits her with the poison that totally kills him, but she just has her little magic gem on her necklace and she's fine. You know, and then not even, you know, the stuff that she pulls off throughout the rest of that book.
To be fair, with the poison, she may have spent a lot of time developing immunities to, like, Iocane powder and whatever else may have been used. So she may have just
practically
done that.
But you don't also have magical gems that just light up on your neck without, like, LEDs and batteries.
True.
And I'm My problem sure is that she doesn't have those.
I want them to actually tell us what the deal is with that, though, because even so far as I am, there's just no explanation behind it.
It's midichlorians.
Yeah, see, and I'm worried it's going to be something stupid.
No, but do you... No, it's better not to have the explanation of where it all comes from.
Well, I don't need a deep explanation, just like...
We don't need an explanation. Something. It's magic. It doesn't... You know, when you start... when you start, like, categorizing it and all that stuff, then it just becomes stupid.
Well, I'd say not categorizing, but maybe learning what some of the rules of that magic are, or maybe limitations, or what the trade-off is, if any, to use that magic. What's happening... Yeah, I agree that there is...
People aren't...
Yeah, you do run the risk of midichlorians being something...
They're in like your cells.
Yeah, like that kind of explanation coming out and just fucking up the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because the Force was mystical and amazing and this permeating force, for lack of a better word.
Oh, I think that George Lucas just got pissed off that we were calling it a fantasy instead of a sci-fi. Sorry, George. It's a fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's science fiction requires actual science, but
yeah.
Star Trek, science fiction.
Exactly.
Star Wars,
fantasy and science.
Yeah.
Setting.
Future fantasy or long yeah. past fantasy, futuristically presented. I don't know.
Whatever, it's futuristic. The bullshit long time ago thing, who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how this plays out. I'm curious as to what the American television audience, how they're going to accept the realm of fantasy and magic and stuff. Because the first season is so political and so... There's so much about the machinations and the characters themselves. Now we're getting into kind of the higher fantasy with the next few books. And I'm very curious to see if it holds up in popularity and esteem.
Well, the politics never goes away. It's just they get new weapons.
Well, that and you get this mix. You know, over across the Narrow Sea, you're going to see more of the magic with the dragons. But you're still going to have the strong sense of politics as she does what she's doing over there. And then up on the wall, yeah, you've still got the politics, but you've got the White Walkers and you've got the magic and the old gods. And then... really in King's Landing and the rest of the war, it's just people killing each other other than, like, you were talking about the resurrection piece and stuff like that.
I just hope it doesn't become the you know, Deus Ex Machina of the show to explain how things happen, because they have to cut certain, you know, exposition out, or they have to cut scenes out or characters. So to explain away something, they just start throwing that in.
Well,
I know,
I mean,
it's not that likely, but it's possible.
Well, given the fact that they're going on essentially a 10-hour adaptation of, you know, 800 to 1,000-page novels, they have a whole lot of time and a whole lot of room to really explain things. I mean, the only, like, when, at least for me, the big explanation that sticks out for that they left out of the first season was how Cyrio Forel became the first Sword of Braavos. And I just loved that scene in the book where he's, you know, telling her, you know, giving her, like, giving Arya the whole, like, lesson on, observation, and that's how he became the first sword. And I mean, but ultimately, that's, you know, that's, it's like a 2 minutes from the show that would have been added, but they just left out. And I mean, it's just, they're doing a good job of explaining everything. The only thing that sucks is that there are just some things that just never get explained. Like, who the fuck is Jon Snow's mother?
The first season, I think, was done expertly. Like, I didn't feel anything was really lacking. I thought making the prostitute, I forget her name off the top of my head. A important character somewhat was kind of weird. Like, there was some strange stuff they did. The Littlefinger sex scene where he just rants in front of two women having sex. That was a little bit bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
But the second and third books have so much happen, especially the third one. I don't know how the hell they can possibly condense it into 10 hours.
Well, the third one, they've already... Yeah, they said they're going to make the third one 2 seasons.
Yeah.
They'd have to.
Yeah, they've already said that they're planning on doing that because there is so much content that, they're going
to
split.
They also need to do that to give Martin time to finish up the series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's got 2 books left now, or maybe 3 since he had to split Dance with Dragons.
He said it's 2 more after Dance.
Okay.
But so, again,
I think the show's probably going to end up getting canceled before he's going to finish the series.
That's a unfortunate possibility. I hope not. I'd like to, if they maintain the level of quality and faithful adaptation that they've done so far, I would really love to see the rest of the series done.
Okay, well, let me amend that statement. I think the show will run out of content to adapt before he finishes the series.
That's a pretty accurate statement, I'd say.
Well, because what did he do? I think 2004 was when Feast of Crows came out.
It took 6 years, yeah, so I think 2006 maybe.
And in the back of the book, he's like, "Hey, all your characters you love and didn't see in this book, they'll be back next year, guys. Don't worry."
Yeah.
And then five years later.
Yeah.
Good God.
Yeah, because I remember waiting about half a decade to get Dance with Dragons. That was not a fun wait.
That says to me that guy doesn't have a very good editor, because they're not able to, like, get him to do stuff on time, or he just edits all of his own stuff and just endlessly rewrites everything.
Well, I'm sure he's under a lot more pressure now, which is why I think he will almost be forced to get through it.
Yeah.
Just because now he kind of has to. Before, there was no TV writing on it. There wasn't the big uproar about it that there is now. Now he's got a lot more fans to please and answer to.
True, but at the same time, he has three books that have yet to be adapted, at least one of which is getting turned into two seasons. So you're looking at 4 to 6 years that he has to get the next book out, so that way they have something to adapt in time to get a season of TV out.
I think it takes a lot longer for them to get them adapted, though, so I think he'd probably have to have book six out.
It was roughly a year. From when Game of Thrones Season 1 wrapped to when Season 2 premiered.
But they already had those books and all that information. Like, they have to read it, figure out what to cut, do all that, figure out what scenes they need, what settings. Like, there's probably a lot more work.
Especially if they were doing setup for the second season.
Yeah.
They'd had to have kind of been looking into that.
We'd be looking at, like, a Mad Men-style 15-month break.
Oh, God.
You know.
Well, and then also he's going to have to, let's say he's got 4 to 6 years to get the next book out. Not really, because he'll also have to have time to write the seventh book. He has 4 to 6 years to get the series finished.
Yeah. Man, and they're going to have to recast some of those kids, too.
Yeah, that could be difficult.
Because, I mean, they're already all too old, you know? I mean, it's just, I guess you can't really have an 8-year-old kid, you know, doing the whole, like, Bran Stark thing, because it's not safe to do stuff like that with small children.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, everyone's older than they were, so. Which I guess makes Sansa just a really late bloomer.
Well, but then that's the great thing about everyone dying so easily and so quickly. You don't have to recast a lot of people, you just have new actors for new characters.
Man, next year we are going to have to, like, really just get ready for a whole bunch of deaths.
Yeah.
So that just hit me, because I'm like, because, man, book three is brutal.
Yeah.
That was my favorite one of the series, too, and by the end of it, I felt like I'd been reading two or three books, because so much happens, and, oh, God, yeah, the ending is the biggest punch in the balls.
I hope that they actually put the epilogue in there, too.
Oh, they have to, for sure.
Because that epilogue was so great.
Yeah, and it plays a much bigger role in the fifth book.
Yeah, I imagine it kind of would. But, I mean, it's just like, man, those fire priests, man, or the red priests, they are just, that's just, that whole, like, the Lord of Light religion really just pisses me off. Because, like, with the exception of what's the like priest guy that hangs out with Beric Dondarrion?
God, I do not know off the top of my head.
I forget his name. He always shows up at, like, the melees with the flaming sword and stuff, and that guy. I forget his name. But he's the only one out of, like, everyone who follows Lord of Light that doesn't strike me as a complete tool and jackass and ungodly person. And even he's pretty ungodly. You know, because, like, especially, like, Melisandre, everything that she does is just terrible.
Yeah, she's She.
That's, yeah, it is, it's really tough not to bring up the fifth book right now, isn't it?
It really is.
Oh God, I hate you guys. Here's the thing.
You know how you kind of really hate Jamie at first, and then you kind of don't hate Jamie as much?
Yeah.
Damn it. God damn it.
It doesn't go quite so far as that.
You know what? I was so happy just absolutely hating her. The same, like, just please tell me I still hate Cersei Lannister. God damn it.
Well, I'll tell you, I still hate Cersei Lannister. I don't think anything will ever get me to stop hating Cersei Lannister.
All right.
But, well, you'll
see. Next thing I know, you're going to tell me that I'm going to start hating Starks and Snows, and that Up is down, and Daenerys Targaryen's actually a boy. So,
no, that depends. Do you hate her?
No, I like her.
Okay, cool. And yeah, you're, for the most part, good.
Because she has such a great journey in two.
Yeah.
In the second book. And it just
honestly
keeps
hoping that she takes over the Iron Throne and that's the way it ends, that she becomes Queen of Westeros again. Or it's not really, again. But
it's really hard to know who to root for. I'd be happy if Daenerys takes over, if Tyrion took over, if Jon somehow swept down and took over.
I don't see Jon taking over. I don't see Tyrion taking over, really. I honestly think it's going to end up being Daenerys. And I'm really happy about that, because she doesn't have the batshit crazy of Aerys or Viserys.
Right.
And she is the rightful... Yeah, and she is the rightful ruler of the land. Before Robert and Ned's really usurping the throne, honestly. Even though Aerys was batshit crazy, he was still king.
But he was batshit crazy.
Yeah, but they could have killed Aerys and then put
Rhaegar up, yeah.
Yeah. And then
was Rhaegar dead at that point?
Rhaegar was dead.
Well, you find out, is it the fifth book we find out all the motivation behind the war itself? Or is that earlier?
It's hinted at in the first bits, with just, you know, Aerys setting people on fire and...
Well, there's like, yeah, I think it is in the fifth book that you get some more insight into more of what was really behind overthrowing Aerys.
I will say, I do miss Robert Baratheon. He was fun.
Yeah,
like he wasn't a good king at all. He shouldn't have been king at all.
No,
like he should have just hung out down at Storm's End and just had some fun drinking and whoring. But he was just fun.
I think if Ned's sister hadn't been killed and Robert and she had gotten married instead of Cersei, that he may have been a better king.
Yeah.
And that things may have ended up turning out very differently.
I think if he hadn't have been an alcoholic, he'd have been a better king.
That too.
So we need to invent the 12-step program for those guys.
Yeah.
God, there are so many lushes on that show.
Well, what else do they have to do, you know?
Yeah, it's a product of the times. So that kind of era, alcohol isn't really, I mean, how kids drink alcohol, or older
kids.
Because
they poured their chamber pots into their drinking water and then thought, oh, crap, I'm getting cholera. I'd better stop drinking water, you know?
Right.
It's sad, but it makes sense.
Yeah, I guess. People are dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll agree with you on that one.
Man, it is really hard just to talk about season one and the first episode of season two.
Yeah, how much of season one have we actually talked about, and how much have we actually jumped forward into the rest of the books?
A lot.
What's it's amazing
on the jumping forward.
The book is so good, but you really only get a taste of the series. The real meat of what it is books 2, 3, and 4, and now 5.
Yeah. One is a good setup, and then everything else starts going to shit right after
exactly.
One.
Exactly.
I still think that probably my favorite part of all of the books are the prologues.
Hmm.
You know, and how they set up, like, because when you look at it, like, especially the prologue for the first season,
yeah,
with the Rangers and the White Walkers, it's just like you have no clue what any of that even means.
Yeah, and it doesn't really enter into the first season that much.
No, not
the
at
White
all.
Walkers are concerned, and then it not slowly until, like, starts the very growing.
End.
Yeah, and then it starts growing slowly throughout the rest of the books until it is something serious.
Yeah, and then, like, the prologue in season two, or for book two, with, Melisandre and the Maester and Dragonstone, and really getting introduced to that character, you know? But, I mean, that one gives you a little bit more, and then, like, at book three had a really good prologue, and book four is, I'm still trying to figure out how that all fits in, but I imagine it will, hopefully sometime before the last chapter. But... Yeah.
Book 4 is a bit of a disappointment because so little happened that you actually care about.
I don't know. I care about Samwell.
Yeah, there's a few people, but you don't see Jon, Daenerys, not much Arya, Tyrion. They're all out of there. So.
Yeah.
I have high hopes for Arya.
I think everyone does.
There's a lot I want her to accomplish. really want her to accomplish.
There's a lot she should do. Like, I think she should take over the world.
I kind of agree. I wouldn't mind seeing her win as well. Like, I'd be down with that.
Yeah. I don't need to see her become queen or anything. I need to see her finish her list.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I think that'll be a good full circle for Arya, is finishing her list and then starting to work on some other stuff.
Man, it does suck, though, that some of those people get taken off the list and she doesn't get to handle them herself.
Yeah.
But the people who get taken off of that list that she doesn't get to handle are taken out in such amazing ways. Like, I think, you know, the end of book three, that's all I'm saying. Like, because there's a couple names on there that just get taken off so expertly.
Yeah, there's the stuff with her in the fifth book, too, and with Roose Bolton and that whole family.
Oh, they're crazy.
Good God, I want them to be killed even more now. Like, Jesus.
I'm not even going to ask how she got back over there with the Boltons, because when I left her, she was elsewhere, further east, if you will.
Oh, I didn't say she got back with them. I'm just saying that her motivation against them is more assured through the fifth book. So.
Oh, yeah. I recall now. I'm typing something because it's a spoiler. You guys can, like, nod or something if I'm right in remembering. Oh, okay.
Not.
Oh, yeah, I'm forgetting. God.
That, the fifth book is really a pretty gruesome affair, I thought.
Yeah. The ending. Oh, man.
Yeah,
the way it ends. Sorry, Tom, but the way it ends, I'm like on the edge of my seat for the next one because I need to know what the resolution of that is.
I put it down and I just basically was like, "Fuck George R. R. Martin, I'm never reading another one of these books again." God damn it! Like, I'm so
pissed. You know, I did a similar thing last year while reading through Sum of All Fears. But not with George R. R. Martin. And it wasn't Dad's fault either. It was Obama's fault, actually.
Of course.
No, it actually legitimately was, because I was finishing up Sum of All Fears when they assassinated Osama bin Laden.
Oh, okay.
And I was just like, because, like, the end of Sum of All Fears is very similar, and I was just like, yep, this is too real. Fuck Tom Clancy, I'm done.
Never read this guy again.
Yeah, I haven't gone back since. So, not saying that they aren't good, although there is a chapter in that book where he explains the nuclear detonation in what a physics professor called the most realistic depiction of how a nuclear detonation would occur. And I started reading it, and it's going through the physics of it, and I flipped forward a couple pages, and I looked, and they were still doing it, and I flipped forward a couple more pages, and it was still going on, and I flipped to the last page of the chapter, and it was just finishing it up, and I was just like, yep, next chapter.
You don't need to see how an atomic bomb affects...
No, a thermonuclear device works. Slightly different, but I called Dad the next, like, not the next day, but a few days later, and I was like, so Dad, I'm reading some of off here. He's like, yeah, what do you think of it? And I was like, well, I just got to your chapter where you talk about the bomb going off. Oh, spoilers.
Yeah.
He's just like, yeah, I had a physicist tell me that it was the best, you know, depiction or fictional depiction of blah 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 blah. And I'm like, yeah, I hated it.
Oh.
He's just like, what do you mean? I'm like, it was the most boring damn thing I've ever read. If I wanted to read a physics textbook, I'd go back to college.
Yeah, sometimes authors get a little bit too, they want to be too realistic and pull in too much information.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon.
Yeah, well, it was that way too with, I don't know if any of you guys read Hunt for Red October, but I mean, at the end of that, I felt that I could operate a nuclear submarine fairly well.
I appreciate that kind of thing because it shows that effort has gone into giving me an accurate book, that the information there is really something that it makes it more real, the story. I can understand that maybe there's too much of it in there, definitely. Like a whole chapter on how a thermonuclear device is exploding does seem a bit excessive.
It is, and I'm not saying that, like, Hunt for Red October suffers for me now feeling that I could operate a submarine, but... and I agree that there is just a certain level, but there is that line.
Yeah.
And sometimes that line is, you know, like there are definitely times where Martin crosses that line because I'm like, seriously, dude, I really don't care about this third cousin twice removed from this lesser house that you're going into all this detail on just so you can go into the detail of it right now. And I have a very strong feeling that this is never going to be important ever again. Why do I have 10 pages of this?
There are large swaths of his later books that you could just graze over and not miss anything of the story.
There are large swaths of all of his books.
Absolutely. I think 1 and 3 aren't as bad, but 2, 4, and 5, especially 4, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because I'm on one of the Brienne chapters was the last one I read, and I'm just like, this is pointless.
Absolutely. Most of the 4th book really disappointed me. I was pretty underwhelmed.
It's like she rolls up to a town. They talk about the town for like 20 pages. Oh, and then Lord Tarly shows up. They have a 1-page conversation, and then 5 more pages of stupid shit, when seriously it could have just been, Brienne arrived at the town. She talked to Lord Tarly. Things did not go well. Next chapter.
Yeah. How many flashbacks do we get of the exact same moment of her life, too? Like the same recount in her mind of the same duel? Oh, Jesus. It was.
I don't even want to know. I love her character, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's a good character.
She is a great character. And man, you just like I don't know what happens in book 5, but there's just like her and the person she's with throughout all of season 3. You just want the two of them to get together.
Mm. They actually do end up together in book 5. They they actually cross the narrow sea and go off and start a life together.
They make their own like new noble house. And, like, they have like just entirely 2 mannish children and
yes.
I wonder if they can squeeze books 4 and 5 into the same series if they spread it out over 2 years.
They probably could.
I think that would be better.
They were supposed to be 1 book originally, weren't they?
Well, 5 and 6 were Dance with Dragons and the upcoming book were going to be 1 book.
I thought it was Feast and Dances.
Was it?
Because at the end of Feast of Crows, he has that note to people like, oh, all of your favorite characters were going to be in here, but I had so much I split them into 2.
Oh, all right.
So and that's why everyone is surprised it took them 6 years.
Like in 1 book. And...
Yeah.
Stupid Cersei Lannister. I hate that she has her own chapters now because that's like that's the sign that you're either going to continue to hate someone more or hate someone more
or start liking.
You know, it's like when Theon got his own chapters, I was like, oh, God, I don't want to like this character. And then by the end, you're like, no, I hate him even.
Yeah.
So it's just, and then someone else who I don't want to say anything about because we've already mentioned it. But, you know, Chris knows who I'm talking about, because I started that book and I'm just like, man, I hate this guy. I'm not hating him so much. God, why am I starting to like this guy? I hate this. I hate myself for liking him now.
And when do you see Theon's the resolution to what happens to him? It's really like, now I can't hate him as much.
Yeah.
Like, I feel bad.
I there is nothing in the world that could make me feel bad for
him. You wait you until say you read that. It. So did I.
Well, I know who he's with right now, and everything that I can imagine he's getting, he deserves.
Wait until you read the fifth book. There's honestly, I agree with Adam. I hated Theon for a really long time. And then you kind of hate him a little less because you kind of begin to understand some things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
And then you're just like, God, I can't. You can't because you. Oh, it's so sickening. And it's. Yeah, it's rough. The fifth book is vicious, especially in regards to the Boltons and how all that goes down.
Yeah.
I don't like them at all. Like them.
Be thankful you're not going to end up liking the Boltons. I'll give you that one.
Okay, that's good because, like. Yeah, there's just so many like oath breakers and stuff like that in that series, and especially in like a universe that really takes an oath of fealty and loyalty so seriously, to have oath breakers and stuff like that. It's just, man, that's like an instant trip to like hate town.
Yeah.
Well, and when you first meet Bolton in Hammerhall, you're just like, okay, he's kind of creepy and scary, but he's not that bad. And then by the fifth book, I need these people to be murdered viciously.
Yeah, very soon, please. Yeah.
I'll say what's really good about Martin's writing and the way he's writing these characters is I get so angry reading some of his books that I just want to like eat the book and tear it apart with my teeth because I hope that somehow it will hurt the characters inside of the book.
Hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, he does make some. He does build great characters, you know, one way or the other.
Yeah.
These are definitely people that you would like, especially like some characters like Catelyn Stark. It's just like, man, if she were real and I ran into her on the street, I would give her a hug because, damn it, she needs it.
Yeah, it depends on if you give her a hug before or after.
Yeah, yeah.
It's either give her a hug or run the fuck away.
I'm not giving her a hug after. That's scary, man.
Yeah.
But no, but seriously, especially like where she's at like right now in the series.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's this really wonderfully strong character who just, she's like, I mean, she does eventually break in glorious fashion. But it's just, she just needs like that. She just needs like 10 minutes to just not have to be strong. And then she wouldn't have broken at that particular moment. And then it would have played out considerably differently.
Yeah. A little bit of spoilery for people who are just like watching the seasons and not reading the books. Even she gets to a point where I'm starting not to like her as much because in the after mode, she's far too black and white. And far too harsh.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen her much in the after, except for like that very brief, the epilogue.
It definitely changes her personality, obviously.
Absolutely. You're kind of rooting against her at this point.
Well, yeah, she turns. I mean,
well, it's like, look at what happened. The other similar character, whose name I'm not going to throw out because it is a bit of a spoiler as well. I mean, even he, in his similar transformations, it's like, as they mentioned, it's like he starts to lose things, you know, and just, I mean, she snapped before that transformation, so who knows what she lost even before it.
Yeah,
you know, because like, I mean, when that all goes down, like, she snaps.
Well, she went through a lot of really bad shit.
Yeah, and then a whole bunch of really bad shit happening right in front of her face.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to hear that your husband, the guy that you love and all this stuff and have spent, you know, decades with, is executed hundreds of miles away from you, but it's another thing to have the Red Wedding happen right in your face.
Yeah.
You know. God, that's going to be such a great, like, 20 minutes of TV.
Oh, God.
There, like Adam's saying, there's a lot of stuff in the upcoming books that are just really fantastic, and there's a lot of it that I want to see.
Like, can you imagine ending a season of TV on that?
I want to see the season that ends with Tyrion that I was talking that about in chat
that's
beforehand.
The same season.
I want to see that as a season ending.
Because that's just going to be like the most insane ending for television ever. Like people are just going to like sit there and it's just it's going to be like the Best of Both Worlds Part One times like 50,000. And everyone's just going to be like, what the fuck did I just see?
It's tough to know if the Red Wedding or Tyrion would be a better ending for that season.
I think the Red Wedding, personally, though the Tyrion thing would also be very good.
I'd say Tyrion, because it's a much shorter... I mean, have that episode, I guess that final episode, maybe be the Red Wedding, and then have the last minute or two be Tyrion... doing what Tyrion does, and then
have a post-credit sequence of the epilogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be how it has to go, because I think people will be so reeling from the Red Wedding that they'll see the Tyrion stuff, and it might have some more impact and personal...
And it is slightly uplifting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... I like how that's our level of uplifting for these books.
Yeah, that's how you uplift things, is that.
Yes.
You have Tyrion do something completely nuts.
Yeah.
God, that was so great. Because literally, the prediction I made to you was completely off the cuff and a joke.
Yeah. And so badly that, dude, you are 100% right on it, but I couldn't.
Yeah, because I believe, you know what, I'm just going to just say it. Spoilers, don't pay attention to what's said for the next 35, 40 seconds. I said to Chris, like, in a text message, as I'm picking up season three, it's like, or picking up book three, I'm like, man, there are going to be great things for Tyrion in this, or he's going to completely lose it and kill his dad. And spoilers.
Yes. And well, continue spoilers, I want that last shot of the season to be him... opening the door with the bolt right into the gut and then making the quip about shitting bolts. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then cut to credits, end the fucking season, and then we'll pick up in the next one.
God, that was such a great scene in the books, too.
It really was.
It's one of my favorites. I can read that chapter and that section of it and over and enjoy it every time.
Man, and what's his name? Charles Dance, the guy who plays Tywin Lannister, is so great, too. Hmm. Like, he has that role down. You know? I mean, well, really all the Lannisters. Like, I love those actors.
They did a great job. I think Lena Headey's the only one that I'm not totally sold on. She's a great actress. She isn't what I pictured Cersei.
No, but she's got, like, the crazy of Cersei down. You know.
Yeah, I just saw her as more, much blonder for one, and a little bit more, I don't know, diabolical? See, she doesn't seem as clever as she does in the books.
I think that what they're doing is that they've pulled her paranoia closer to the front than where it is, because, like, she definitely is more diabolical and planning and conniving at the start, and her paranoia develops. But I think they're just making her paranoia something, you know, more prescient and all stuff than they did in the book. Mm.
She's more, like, I think kind of shrill and hysterical in the book, too. Like, she really acts out quickly in some situations, and she lets herself get trapped by her own ambition quite often. I hope that comes out more.
Yeah. Man, that just really just goes to prove that Joffrey just really is her kid.
Fucking Joffrey, man. I hate that kid so much. What happens to him...
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah, happens to him. I
love the way that, like, two of the main characters just sit there and they're laughing through it. I mean,
we should celebrate, but then it ends up fucking over Tyrion. Oh, God, I hate how it ends up screwing Tyrion. So it's
screws everyone when you think about it.
Yeah.
Like, especially, like, where I'm at in, like, book four was, like, the whole thing going on in Dorne, you know, and, like, the plotting against Tommen that's going on. Oh, no, spoiler. Tommen. You know, okay, those little kids, they don't do anything.
No.
But, like, I mean, it's just, it's absolutely nuts, all the stuff that goes on. Like, man, like, if modern politics were more like this, I think I would care about them more. It would be absolutely terrible, but...
It would be awful, but you'd be more invested in it, yeah.
I would be. I'd be like, man, I really got to think about where I'm putting my vote this November. Will he be here come December?
Yeah. Will I be retaliated upon for my vote?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I'd cheer for anyone. I'd just try to hide, because if you back the wrong person, you're dead.
Yeah.
Oh, man. See, that's why I'm kind of glad I was making a joke before you got here, Adam, is that, like, oh, thankfully I'm a one percenter, so that makes me a Lannister, so I'm safe for the most part. As long as I don't leave the Rock.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? Or, like, learn how to carry a sword. You know? Because, like, seriously, man, especially when you have people like Sander and Gregor Clegane in that universe, why would anyone ever pick up a sword?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So those guys are complete assholes, although the Hound gets... I like the Hound. I always kind of did.
I didn't at first, but he grows on you.
He does.
Because he...
It's the Sansa thing that made me like him.
Yeah, and then it carries on into book three, where he has that weird relationship going on with another Stark.
Yeah. Then he has that real hate relationship with his brother.
Yeah, dude, his brother is just a complete piece of shit.
Oh, yeah. He got what was coming to him.
Oh, totally.
At a high cost, but he got what was coming to him.
That particular thing is like, because, yeah, texting you back and forth with that one, you never get within arm's reach of a Clegane.
No.
It's, there are things you don't do. You know?
God, and that could have been such a good ending. Like, it could have, I hate the fact that all the characters make that one stupid impulsive decision where everything's about to work out and then it just goes to hell.
Mm-hmm. It's because everyone in that universe is just so fucking arrogant.
Yeah.
You know, because they have to prove that they're right and at the expense of their life.
Yeah.
You know, especially, like, I felt bad because, like, you really just got introduced to that character and he was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, man, I really like this guy. He's going to be really awesome. And then two chapters later... Just like, I gotta stop liking people, and maybe that through, like, quantum mechanics will change the outcome of the book and they'll survive and they'll be like, yes.
Yeah. No. But even people you don't like really do get it.
So no, when you think, now that I think about it, it's very realistic in that fact where it's like, you know, everybody has the equal opportunity for death and life and all that stuff, but just like in real life, we only pay attention when bad shit happens to good people.
Yeah.
Unless it's, like, really, really bad shit happening to people that we absolutely despise.
Yeah, and then we revel in it.
Yeah. God, we're terrible.
Although, then again, read the fifth book and you see Than, and you're like, I can't revel in this. Like, I can't celebrate this.
Yeah.
Don't know me. I might absolutely despise this guy.
Part of it's just empathy. Like, you don't want to see any human being going through some things because it's just too inhumane.
It's a mix. It's a mix of that and of getting a little more perspective into him.
Yeah,
and some of his actions, and it the mixture of that makes you kind of pity him. Definitely,
that's the problem. Is even all the assholes in the books have such clear and reasonable motivations. Even Cersei, you're kind of like, I understand why she is the way she is, and you kind of feel bad for her, and you understand her path. And every character's like that except for the Mountain, really.
Yeah, he's just a dick.
Yeah, he's sadistic.
Yeah, he's missing some things that make people human. like all of them. Because, I mean, especially like the story of the mountain and the hound and how, you know, all that stuff, like that's just, like, yeah. That's somebody who was just born wrong. So that's the way I see it.
It's a twisted world Martin created.
Yeah.
I don't know. He also created some weird gods too.
Yeah, that's strange as well. I'm wondering how theological he's going to end up getting in the last few books too.
Well, I mean, not knowing what happens in most of 4 and all of 5, I really do still stand by my theory that the 7 are the readers.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that one.
Oh.
Because like you look at the 7 and they are just these very 7 basic archetypes that most human beings could fall into, and they don't appear to have any direct or influence at all on the world. You know, so it's just like I always kind of thought that like the 7 were meant to be us, the reader.
It could be interesting. Yeah. There's a lot because he is bringing out the magic more and more. And like with the White Walkers, we still don't have much with them. Even into book 5, there isn't a terrible amount of explanation. So I'm very curious as to how it relates to the old gods and to the 7 and, you know, the red god or the whoever the hell.
Those priests or however the hell you pronounce it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm wondering how that all ties in and who's legitimate and who's just acting as a god.
Yeah. It should be interesting. And, like, man, because it's the end of book 2 when Daenerys, like, picks up the Unsullied, right?
Shit, I don't remember if that's 2 or 3.
I can't recall.
Yeah, I think it's 2 because in 3 it's where she starts like marching with them and starts like actually doing stuff.
I think it's the same. Oh yeah, because the Unsullied is different. Okay, yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that because that will be cool. And yeah, there's so much that I'm looking forward to with this and how it translates. Because, like, the casting is so awesome.
Yeah.
It's so great. You know, I mean, it's just, you just have these, like, just classy actors and actresses and sets and costume design. And, man, I'm still sad that Khal Drogo had to die because Jason Momoa was so great in that role.
Which is weird, because if you've seen Conan, you realize how bad an actor he actually is.
No, he's great when he doesn't have to speak an actual language.
Yeah, when he doesn't actually have to act, he's awesome. Yeah, no, he was great.
When he's just yelling and making noises,
very much so.
If Conan himself could have been subtitled, oh, he'd have been great.
Yeah.
If he just you know. Or maybe he should play Harry for the Harry and the Hendersons remake. Sold, you know.
We desperately need that.
Yeah, we totally do. John Lithgow can reprise his role.
That's probably true. He looks about the same.
Yeah, he does look about the same, and I'm sure after Dexter, he's been needing something to do.
Yeah.
That was a great season of Dexter.
It really was.
I still have to finish the first season.
Oh, the first two seasons are great. The third season is kind of, I don't know. And then, like, the fourth season is great, and then I haven't seen 5 and 6.
Right, I'm right there with you. 1 and 2 are real good.
Which Carradine is that?
Keith.
Yeah, he's just, like, as the, essentially the kind of the villain, you know, or antagonist, really, I should say. He's so great, you know, and it is, like, because, I mean, God, that's such a great season. Well, I mean, well, really, it's a 3 antagonists that season,
right.
but yeah, I should watch that one again, you know. But like, there was part of me that was so sad about that because one of the antagonists, I really enjoyed his character, and it was really sad to see that one go away.
Which one?
Dokes.
Oh yeah.
God, because he was like the Samuel L. Jackson of that universe. when you think about it, because all he really does is he's like, I got mouth, you motherfucker, you know, and that's like, every sentence ends with some form of terrible, terrible profanity. And it's just, he's this complete, like, he's a great cop and all this stuff, but man, that motherfucker is angry. Oh, that's good times, though. So, yeah.
It did drop down, though. I think most scripted TV always has those dips around the third season. And they kind of catch up.
Community's third season is amazing.
I agree completely.
Like, this is a show that, like, if you just watch the pilot, you're like, this show's going to suck. Because the pilot was terrible compared to the rest of the series. Absolutely. But then you're like, but it has this level of promise, and you're just like, okay. And then it's almost as if, like, the pilot was written by completely different people. You know?
And now they're kind of just like, we're going to be the most nerdy, bizarre, meme-generated show ever.
Yeah, but it's so expertly done.
Oh, absolutely. The fact that they had their latest episode done as a Ken Burns documentary, and half of it was still photos.
The one that just aired on Thursday?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet. It's on the DVR. But, like, John Goodman this season has been so great. Wait, you have a goatee and a ponytail. I've been going through some things.
John Goodman's good guy, man. That's a great actor. A good guy.
I'm glad to see he's getting work. Although, did you hear that there's been some beef between Harmon and Chase?
Absolutely.
That's terrible, man.
It's one of the best. Chevy Chase's voicemail calling the show terrible, the writing being awful, and telling Dan Harmon to suck his giant cock over and over was pretty awesome. Yeah, good. For a almost 70-year-old guy,
Chevy that does Chase, sound pretty cool.
It's embarrassing, honestly. It's
dude,
so
Chevy bad. Chase should honestly be sucking Harmon's cock, because Harmon made him matter again.
Right.
Because let's be honest, like, Chevy Chase for the last, like, 20 years or 30 years, really, following, like, National Lampoon's Vacation, has done nothing.
Three Amigos.
Okay, with the exception of the Three Amigos. With the exception of a few standout things,
yes.
For the most part, his entire career has been based around doing the same thing over and over and over again. Yes. And finally somebody was like, here, Chevy Chase, I think you're hilarious. I'm going to make something new for you. And I apologize for all of that cat sound in the background.
It's all right.
It happens.
But... And Misty is, like, trying desperately not to laugh out loud.
No, when we were talking about Saved by the Bell at the top of the show, Lindsay was sitting here giving me the weirdest looks because I was talking about how much I loved Saved by the Bell.
What? Who didn't love Saved by the Bell back in the day?
You know what?
Lindsay, apparently.
Yeah, well, point me to that person, and I will say that they are not human.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, of course you loved it. You're a human being. Like, it's Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, you have a soul and a sense of humor. You love Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
Although, speaking of cats, though, I do often, because that particular one is very easy to make noise, and I taunt a couple of the people in my raid who absolutely love adorable cats by getting her to talk over our voice chat. And one of them hates me for it because her apartment, or where she's living now, doesn't allow cats. And she's like, oh, I can't have a cat. And I'm all like, not my problem. Listen to this cat some more.
Nice.
Yeah. I married a cat lady. It's cool, though.
It's all right. I've got three of them, too. It's not good.
We've just got one, but it's because she tries to kick the ass of any other pet we try to bring home.
That dude. Twitter picture you put up of her birthday, Christ, man. I fucking died. I was laughing so hard at that.
Dude, I showed that picture to Misty, and we both fell in love with that cat.
The only reason she wasn't flipping out and trying to get all that shit off of her is because we had a canned food plate in front of her face. So yeah. She cared more about eating than getting that ridiculously awesome hat off of her head. There was glitter all over her for the next day or two. It's just now kind of finishing up.
This is funny because I just got a text message from our good friend Vinny. And I don't know if you've been paying attention to his Facebook, but
he got the corgi.
Yeah, he's put a whole bunch of pictures up, and he's like, oh, I've become one of those pet people. Vinny.
Damn it, Vinny. I didn't see the those pet people thing, because all I've seen is just some pictures of the pet. And it's, you know, it's a cute little corgi, and he named it Fry.
I guess. I don't know. I haven't actually met it. Like, last Sunday, we were supposed to go get wings. And he's all like, nope, I have this puppy, so I can't get wings. I'm like, what the hell's your problem, man? That puppy's going to be around for like 15 years, you know? This, we can only get wings on Sunday, you know? But, yeah.
So now you've got Damn It Vinny and Damn It Vinny's dog.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if the dog's to ruin wing night, that's it's not okay.
Nope. No, it's not okay, man. It's not okay. I don't care how cute that dog is. God, that is a really cute dog.
It is. I was showing Lindsay the pictures this morning, and she was, oh.
Yeah, I will have to show Misty this particular one where it has, like, satellite dish ears.
Oh, yeah. Is that like, one that he put up on Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's,
I saw about half a dozen of them this morning.
Yeah, I'm just flipping through them right now. Yeah, whatever. My cats are cuter. Misty actually made, one of them its own Facebook.
Wow.
Yeah. It is listed as, my son.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, no, don't have to. Oh, God. You know, can we just edit all of that out?
Why?
I think
now I have to find it.
Know about me.
I have to see here, facebook.com.
Oh, no. The cool thing, though, is that we only have five people who listen. Sadly, one of them is Sir Ian McKellen, and he will never work with me now.
Of course not.
I don't know. I think he would appreciate your honesty. Really?
Yeah, but then he'd appreciate the honesty, but then still be like, I can't believe like how gay you are.
Oh yeah. Let's see here. About, does it list? Let's see. It doesn't list. Oh yeah, I see it. Frey.
Yeah.
That's a cute picture though with the octopus.
It's actually strangely a hexapus.
Oh. Doesn't have enough legs?
No, does not have enough legs.
Tentacles? Or...
Things. Yeah, no, it's, yeah, he's, the first cat that Misty and I got.
Oh.
And, he's really nice. The other two, one we rescued from, the Anti-Cruelty Society, and then the other one we adopted from, one of her friends whose cat had kittens. So, we have this little tiny calico cat who's just like, that's the one you guys hear. She's a little off. She's great though. She's this great little cat, but she's just like, is just loud and out there and possibly brain damaged. Who knows? But she's a sweetheart. So. All
right. Well, I forgot to do the episode intro at any point during the episode. So welcome to episode 24 of Marooners Talk. We'll call this one Everyone Dies.
So like Hamlet?
Yeah. You can find us at maroonersrock.com, facebook.com/maroonersrock, twitter.com/marooners_rock. And on iTunes as Marooners Talk. Anything else today?
I don't think so.